Our first case this morning is AMP Plus versus DMF. It includes a cross appeal. Mr. Tash, you may begin when you're ready. Have I said your name correctly?
It's Tash A.
Tash A.
But I have been called worse.
Good morning. May it please the court, Rick Tash A on behalf of the appellant, AMP Plus Inc., doing business as Elko Lighting. I think it would be helpful to put the 266 patent at issue in this case and somewhat into context to help explain the discussion this morning. The 266 patent is directed to an LED light that is a recessed lighting fixture that fits inside a casting and is not required but may or is capable of fitting inside a junction box that's normally used in a building or a structure. LED lights, by nature, have a significantly lower requirement for heat dissipation and are much smaller in size than traditional fluorescent or incandescent lights, which allows designers to create lighting products that are substantially smaller in size. And because of the significant cost increase at the time with LED lights, they were first used in mobile environments, such as in aircraft and boats and other vehicles that required much larger, heavier batteries and additional fuel to power the inefficient incandescent and fluorescent lights. This increase in cost of LED lights was offset by the decrease in, because of the decrease in size, was offset by the weight and fuel savings, and so it allowed the LED lights that were recessed lightings to first be used in and achieve commercial success in mobile environments. And in the early 2000s, the price of LEDs started to come down, and so designers started to use them in fixed environments, such as buildings and structures. And so by the time the 266 patent was filed in 2013, the technical issues associated with installing LEDs were well known to procedures in the lighting industry, and they were being applied to mounting these LED lights into fixed structures, fixed environments such as buildings and structures. And why is this important? Without oversimplifying the 266 patent, DMF characterizes the 266 patent and its technology as a lighting fixture that's recessed, that fits and complies with building codes and safety requirements that are used in fixed environments. But if you carefully look at the prior art, all of this technology was known and used in the mobile environment decades before. And so, in essence, what we're fighting about here is a change in size. All that was done was taking smaller mobile lights that were used in aircraft and in boats, which are much smaller environments, so the ceilings are much lower, the spaces in which they're lighting are much smaller, and moving it into homes and other buildings that are much larger in volume and size. And so the lights had to progressively get bigger. And then, as DMF points out in its briefing and in its arguments before the board, these lights fit inside, at least as to buildings that require code compliance, fit inside a junction box. So all they've done is taken a smaller light and make it larger and make sure that the flange to mount it fits inside a junction box and remove the can.
And this may... Can we talk about your driver construction?
Sorry?
Can we talk about the driver construction?
Absolutely.
And in particular, I want to look at the prosecution history, page 4634, if you've got access to that.
I do.
And I'm focused on the last paragraph of that page in particular. Do you think this last paragraph, or can you tell me why this last paragraph would not be a disavowal of non-building main power input in terms of that particular construction of driver?
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Judge Cunningham, may I have the page number again, please?
Yes, of course. So it's appendix page 4634, the last paragraph in particular.
And I'm sorry, your question was?
Yes. So I want to know, in your opinion, why is the statement, and I'm going to point you to the statement that is around his recognition of various challenges. Do you see that statement in the last paragraph? Through the end of that sentence?
Yes.
And can you tell me why that statement would not be a disavowal of non-building main power input in terms of the driver construction?
In the first instance, it's permissive. And in the second instance, it's got to be read in the context of the patent itself, the specification, as well as the file history. And DMF makes clear in its arguments to the patent office that while building code requirements are something that they have to comply with, it's not a disavowal. It's one embodiment of, you know, of what's being taught. And the patent is replete with examples of how the castings, the junction boxes, and the use of the device can be much smaller. And for example, DMF's counsel admitted at the final hearing in before the board that you can be found to infringe regardless of whether or not you move it into a junction box. And so the driver is not limited to attaching a lighting system to a building's main. In fact, they said just the opposite to the board. They said that you can be found to infringe whether or not you attach it to a junction box. So it goes back to my comment of just a moment ago. This is really all about size. This is really not whether or not it attaches to a building's main. And at worst, that statement that you've just cited to, Your Honor, is permissive. And it's counteracted by the specification itself and the fact that the board found there was no disavowal, coupled with the statement and admission made by DMF's counsel at the hearing that you can be found to infringe.
When you say the specification, you're referring to column 4, lines 21 through 4?
Yes, 20. In addition, lines 25 through 27 go further and say that the driver may be any type of power supply, including power supplies that deliver an alternating current or a direct current voltage to the light source module 3.
Okay.
There's also, the case law is really clear on this. The Teleflex versus Fiscosa case from this court in 2002 states that, you know, unless the patentee demonstrated its intent to deviate from the ordinary and customary meaning of a claim term by redefining the term or by characterizing the invention in the intrinsic record using words or expressions of manifest exclusion or restriction, representing a clear disavowal of claim scope, the claim terms take on their ordinary and customary meaning. And I believe that that applies here, particularly given the TMF went out of its way to define a driver. And they did so, as you point out, Your Honor, in column 4, lines 21 through 24. And the board adopted almost verbatim their proposed construction.
Are you making a lexicography argument?
In some respects, yes. But I would be making that argument if what was proposed in the 266 patent specification was different than dictionaries that were relied upon by the board. They went further than just relying on the intrinsic evidence. They looked to a definition found in a definition in the Underwriter Laboratories Standard for Safety, UL 8570, that defines a driver. And that definition found in that dictionary is very consistent with what was found in the specification. So I would rely on lexicography if they were somehow taking a construction or a definition that was different than the norm. But I believe it's on all fours with what was understood by the UL dictionary, by Pasitas at the time. And so, no, I don't think that we would need to rely on that. But if we had to, we certainly could.
Did you want to address the obviousness, your obviousness argument, or claim 22?
I can address it in a number of ways. Thanks, Your Honor. In the first instance, we believe that the board failed in its entirety to consider claim 22 and its obviousness argument. And according to the Supreme Court in Motor Vehicle Manufacturers Association versus State Farm from 1983, that constitutes a quintessential failure of an administrative body to adjudicate an issue. And so the...
Why isn't it just a mistake? Because they did list, I think, claim 22 in a table. Why isn't it just a mistake, a typographical error, but in fact they considered claim 22?
For two reasons. The first is it was not even listed in the claims that were considered in ground two, whether to be in it. It tracks claim 17 in its entirety with the exception of being attached to a building's main. And so the board, from our perspective, didn't look at it at all. And so the board rendered its findings with respect to obviousness only on the plurality of elements that is not even contained in claim 22. And so we don't believe it's just a typographical error. We don't believe that the board actually looked at claim 22 at all. I think the mistake, Your Honor, is that they just forgot to look at it. And I think that had they done so, given that they found claim 17 to be both anticipated and obvious in light of the IMTRA references, we believe that the board would have similarly found claim 22 to have been obvious.
If we affirm the board's anticipation finding of claim 17, do we need to reach the board's obviousness finding on claim 17?
I don't believe you do. Case law is pretty clear that... Sorry, just trying to find my notes. The case law with respect to claim 17 says that the court may but does not need to do a separate analysis with respect to obviousness, and that given it found anticipation, case law is clear that you can rely on that anticipation finding because it's the in essence it is an obviousness analysis at the end of the day as well. In fact, the court says that I've answered.
Mr. Tasha, you are in your rebuttal time. Did you
thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Long.
May it please the court. My name is David Long. I'm with the Ergonic Law Firm here on behalf of the cross-appellant DMF. With me today is my co-counsel, Mr. Davidson from the Davidson Law Group. I wanted to start out just to address some of the questions that were raised or to clarify some things that Alco's counsel had stated. One of the things he stated was that for LED lights, there's a lower heat requirement. Well, that's actually not true, and this is in the record, and our expert talked a lot about this. LEDs actually have a significant concern about heat. What happens is LEDs, they can't radiate heat like incandescent light bulbs can do. They can't convect heat by wind. The only way to get rid of the heat is by conducting it away from the back of it. And that's important because if that juncture in that LED semiconductor gets too hot, its temperature rises, and the LED will fail. So it's very important, a very significant design constraint with LEDs is to get that heat away. So that's important. When you look at the invention here, the inventor, Mr. Donis, used a very bulky unified casting that served many functions, but one of it is to dissipate heat generated by the LEDs during operation. You'll see that, for example, in claim one. So that is very important. When you look at, for example, the IMTRA device, it's put up in a ceiling where air can flow over it, right, and convect the heat away. If you put the device in a junction box, there's not that convection. So it's a significant concern. The requirements with dealing with heat didn't go away with LEDs. It actually became more complex with LEDs. Another statement that Elko's counsel said was that it was known, you're using known techniques. And Elko's expert said that it was known to put lights inside of a junction box. Well, that's not true, and the board in its decision commented on that, that it wasn't known to put lights, recessed lights in the junction boxes. They looked at what Elko's expert relied on, which was this Lynch patent, you may recall it, but and
which
glimpse,
patent is
that? Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H,
Lynch,
yes, sir. It's the one that's putting it kind of in a plug socket for a wall. And he said Lynch taught putting the entire device inside of a junction box, and it didn't, and the board commented on that. And it was reasonable for the board to conclude. There's substantial evidence for them to conclude that prior to them teach recessing the light in the junction box. And they did the same thing with the glimpse patent that their expert relied on. Glimpse was actually a surface-mounted light. and it didn't teach recessing the entire fixture inside of the junction box. So that, and there are substantial evidence to support the board's view of that, because when you look at, and in our expert's testimony, and the ELCO's own expert's testimony about that prior art, was that, yeah, the whole thing is not recessed inside of the junction box.
Do you contend that the board substantively analyzed whether Claim 22 was obvious?
We believe they did, but they did not mention it in the obviousness ground.
So how do you, what's the basis for your contention that they substantively analyzed
it? Yes. Yeah, our ultimate contention is this court would reverse if there was error. Not just any error, though. It has to be prejudicial. You've got to show there would have been a different result if the board had not committed the error, because you're not going to remand it if the board is going to reach the same result. Why is that relevant?
Well, even under the APA?
I mean, think so, Your Honor.
Are we really to guess what they would have done with Claim 22?
Here's why I say that, Your Honor, is that there's no dispute. ELCO agreed, in fact, as it argued to the board below, that Claim 22 requires the driver to be coupled to building mains power and the building in which it's installed. There's no dispute about that. There's also no dispute that ELCO did not present an argument as to why it would have been obvious to modify that low voltage electrolyte so it could receive building mains power, which is a high voltage, and be installed in a building. There's no dispute about that. In fact, ELCO in its appeal briefing said that we didn't know we had to because they alleged that we didn't challenge that, but we absolutely did challenge that.
Are you just relying on the analysis on claim construction to support up some type of analysis on obviousness on Claim 22?
No, Your Honor. We rely on that for the point that the board absolutely was cognizant of Claim 22. It was a key issue and was cognizant and agreed with ELCO that it required receiving building mains power.
What appendix sites would you have us look at to support your contention that it was actually considered?
Yes, Your Honor.
I think you have a...
Oh, thank you. I put this so small, I'm having a hard time seeing it, but I list every point, in fact, where we said that. Yes, but we cited in our brief, and I had it just right here. We said it for both ground 2 and ground 3.
But where is it that we would see that the PTAB actually considered Claim 22?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. As far as the PTAB, I thought your question was that we argued it.
I know that you argued it.
Okay, I'm sorry. That they considered it. We know they considered Claim 2. They didn't discuss it in their obviousness analysis. I agree with that. But the point is that's not reversible error. Because since ELCO never argued why it would have been obvious, if you remanded it back to the board, all they would say is, well, ELCO, we repeat, they didn't meet their burden to show it was unpatentable because they made no argument that it would be unpatentable. And so under this court's law, as we understand it, you don't reverse and send something back to the board just to give the same result, and there's no other outcome they could reach. Again, ELCO admits its only argument now about why Claim 22 would have been obvious is something they made in their appeal brief. It's a new argument which they can't make. And so it wouldn't make sense to remand this to the board for the board just to say, well, we said it was unpatentable because ELCO presented no arguments that it was unpatentable. And so it'd be the same result. And that's why we think that decision, their decision should be affirmed on that issue. There's another issue ELCO raised. We explained this in our briefing. I think it's fairly readily understood. We said, yeah, you don't need a junction box to infringe the claims. Well, that's really an infringement issue. Claim 1, for example, says that you have a plurality of elements that align with the tabs of a standard junction box. Claim 1 doesn't say, and you've put it in a junction box. Now, you still infringe Claim 1 if you sell a device that has tabs that would align, the plurality of elements that would align with the tabs of a standard junction box. So when we said, yes, you would still infringe it, it's because it has those features. You don't actually have to put it in a junction box for it to infringe. We do have some claims that say, and then the device is actually put in a junction box.
And of course, the discussion of infringement is only relevant because that which infringes also anticipates or renders something obvious, right?
That would be correct, Your Honor. And so the device would absolutely, though, have to have a plurality of elements that align with tabs of a standard junction box. And so standard junction boxes Absolutely relative to that. And our whole point to the board was you didn't actually have to put it in the junction box to have direct infringement.
Did you want to address the interpretation of driver?
Yes, Your Honor. So when we look at driver, we cite many places in the specification where the patent describes the importance of this invention. The importance of this invention is to make it compact size so that you can put it inside of a standard junction box. You do that by putting the driver and putting the LED module all in the same unified casting. That makes it smaller. The patent discusses problems with the prior art that would have bigger devices. They weren't compact because the driver was outside of the housing for the LED.
Can you address column 4, like around lines 21 through 26, 27, that the other counsel addressed, and just tell us your take on that in particular with respect to driver construction?
Yes, Your Honor. That was the one where I believe they said that defined what a driver was. That would be like saying a car has wheels to roll, and they're saying, well, okay, all cars are things that have wheels, but a wagon is not a car. All that said was a driver provides the power for the LED.
It says the driver is an electronic device that supplies and or regulates electrical energy to the light source module, and thus powers the light source module to emit light. Why isn't that, if not lexicography, at least strong evidence as to what the term driver means?
Because you have to look at the rest of what the specification says. Again, it'd be like saying, if you said a car is a vehicle that has wheels, saying, well, that's a car. But we know a car has other features, too. And when you look in the specification, and one ordinary skill in the art, you know the driver has other features as well. And it's undisputed, Alco's own expert testified that low-voltage drivers that receive low voltage, they don't need a junction box. Why is that important? When you review the specification, the point of the specification is to make this device small enough that you could fit it inside of a junction box. We don't need a junction box for your low-voltage device. So the patent isn't trying to solve any problem about putting low-voltage devices in junction boxes that are required, because junction boxes are not required for low-voltage devices. Their expert agrees. I think the only situation he could think of under cross-examination is if you're in a submarine or an industry room that has explosive gases floating around. In that case, you might put low-voltage light in some kind of special junction box.
What's your best support for saying that buildings should be read into the construction of driver? Like, what would you point us to?
The best thing I would point to is when you look at the patent specification and the final history just as a whole, the whole issue is putting a device that requires a junction box, which is only high voltage devices that require building mains voltage, inside the junction box.
Okay, so let me follow up on that. So I was looking at what I thought was your best evidence and talking about it with opposing counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
But the question I then have for you is, aren't there other claims that have building in the limitation, like looking at claim 22, for example? And if we were to put building into the driver construction, wouldn't that make this other part of the limitation somehow redundant?
Your Honor, it would not, for a couple of reasons. What claim 22 says is you have the driver, and claim 22 is about using these complementary keyed connectors to couple the driver to building mains voltage. So the driver is coupled to building mains voltage, and all claim 22 adds is that you would couple it using complementary keyed connectors. That didn't suddenly convert it into a device that receives building mains power. That was always understood when you read the specification in the file history. You can't take building and building codes out of this. I think Your Honor had referred to in the file history the patent owner's statement that you have to appreciate and understanding our invention that there's problems and challenges in trying to comply with building codes. And the invention was designed to address that issue. Part of that problem is junction boxes and needing them and connecting to building mains voltage. And that's what the patent sought to solve.
But isn't the part of the specification we looked at together even more clear about how drivers should be interpreted?
It is if you look at the other parts, too. For example, and we have this in our briefing, whenever the patent talked about what input went into the driver, it always says, for example, 120 volts or 240 volts. And we cite that in our briefing. The only examples it gave of the type of power that the driver received is the type that requires a junction box, this high voltage building mains voltage. So you can't just take one little snippet out of the specification and say that defines it. You have to look at the entire invention and how it's used. Again, if you have low voltage, you don't need a junction box. So, you know, the invention wouldn't have solved a problem that existed.
A moment ago, I think you referred to a driver in a low voltage context. Are you saying that driver is incompatible with a low voltage system?
The term driver in the 266 patent. Yes.
Let's talk first about just the way the term driver is used in the industry. You can have, and what I think you were saying, if I understood you correctly, was that you could have a driver in a low voltage setting. Is that right in terms of the way it's used in the industry, setting aside the 266 patent for the moment?
Not for buildings. I see I only have 30 seconds left. I'd like to reserve that if at all possible, because I want to find those
sites. You can answer these questions, okay. And I will give you extra time for your rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Can you just refresh me the question?
Yeah. The reference you made earlier, and I just wanted to clarify what you were saying, suggested to me that you were saying that a driver, at least as usually, the term is usually used, incorporates not only the building mains level of power, but also a lower voltage system. Did I misunderstand you, or were you drawing a distinction between the way the term driver is generally used in the industry versus the way it's used in the 266 patent?
Yes, so my intention, if I misspoke, was that in the industry, when you're talking about buildings, when you say building mains power, that brings to mind if someone's skilled in the area, oh, that's a very high voltage.
I'm actually wanting to focus on the term driver.
Yes, Your Honor.
Without respect to building mains or anything else, just if you were to describe to a person of skill in this art a driver, would that person understand that to be limited just to building mains level power, or would it incorporate low voltage systems as well?
Thank you. Yes, and in fact, I was getting to that. Because you know that buildings have building mains power, you know any driver you use will need to be coupled, powered by building mains power. Because that's high voltage, you know what driver you're using here is one that's going to have to receive building mains voltage. Or the alternative would be to have a converter outside of the casting to convert that building mains voltage to a voltage.
I don't think you're answering the question asked. The question asked was, does the word driver unique, as I understand it, is it unique to building mains, or can the word driver be used outside of that context, in which case, what does it mean?
And so it can be used outside of the context, but it depends on the context. A driver for low voltage landscaping would be one that receives or amplifies low voltage. It's in the building industry, in the context of the 266 patent, which is talking about building codes and such. In that context, when you say driver, you know it means one that receives building mains.
Okay.
It may mean something, for example, they cite to this UL Lab standard, and that UL Lab standards, they define driver in a way that encompasses things like garden lights and the such. And so when they define driver there, they had to define it broadly to encompass these other circumstances.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any further questions? No. Okay, thank you.
Thank
we'll
you.
Restore 4 minutes of your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Taché, you have about 3 minutes. I'll give you 4 minutes as well, just to make sure you have a similar amount of time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Hopefully I won't need the time. Let me answer the question with respect to driver. The intra references specifically include a driver. So the short answer to your question is, Your Honor, absolutely driver is not limited to high voltage usage. It's clearly shown in LED recessed lighting, and it's been there for decades. And so the short answer is driver is not limited to high voltage. The second thing is with respect to heat dissipation, ceilings in boats are lower than ceilings in houses, so the same heat dissipation issues exist in the mobile environment and have existed for decades before they were put into junction boxes. One thing I would like to address is counsel for DMF takes issue with some of the statements made by our expert in the context of the board and in their declaration. One of the things that we're most concerned with and most disappointed in is the misrepresentations that were made by DMF to the board with respect to ALCO's characterizations and that of our expert with respect to what Gifford teaches. And it's very clear in, I want to give you the proper appendix site. I'll find that for you and get it. It's very clear from paragraph 110 of our expert's declaration that begins at appendix 168 through 274, pardon me. In paragraph 110, our expert makes unequivocally clear that what he's showing is a partial image of the Gifford figure 3, or figure 1, pardon me. And the reason he does so is to simply show that the adapter is recessed within the junction box. And so, for some reason, the board adopted the position and then questioned the credibility of our expert and discounted the Gifford reference throughout. And the Gifford reference is a relevant reference because it's pertinent to the art, not because it's analogous art, because the board limited the art to recessed lighting, but because it actually relates to the same kind of problem that was being connected, which is in its primary purpose, connecting a recessed light to a junction box. And so all of the references to the Gifford prior art and all of the statements made by our expert were discounted by the board, and his credibility was questioned, and we believe that that stems predominantly to TMS misrepresentations as to the fact that our expert at no point intentionally withheld or misrepresented what that image was that was included in his declaration. And secondly, neither did ELCO nor its expert at any time represent to the board that the Gifford reference was teaching a recessed lighting. And TMF's brief is replete with statements as to that nature, but they don't want cite to anything specific because they can't.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Long?
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to respond to ALCO's counsel about what they represent to the board about what Gifford disclosed. The board cited to the following passages from either ALCO's petition or its expert. ALCO's petition states, quote, a proceeder would have been motivated to apply the teaching of Gifford that a housing for components of compact lighting devices can be inserted into and attached to a junction box. That's at the board's decision at page 44. The board cites at page 49 the statement in ALCO's petition that Gifford teaches that such compact recessed lighting systems may be recessed within an electrical junction box suitable for installation of ceiling. The board at page 49 cites ALCO's expert testimony that Gifford teaches a lighting system that is able to be installed in a standard junction box. The board at page 50 cites the ALCO's expert testimony that Emtron and Gifford are both directed to lighting products that install in shallow recesses.
And that first quote that you said it was recessed lighting, right? The other two don't refer to recessed lighting as a...
The first one could be recessed within an electrical system. Also importantly, and ALCO...
What's the page that you cited for that?
The page for that
you
one.
Have the appendix site that would you get?
I do. That's appendix site, page 135 of the board decision, and it's the board decision that The appendix site for the petition is at appendix 135.
Okay.
The board decision is 4148. ALCO also ignores a significant argument they made. ALCO and its expert testified that adapter plate in Gifford was equivalent to the unified casting. The unified casting is claimed to house the driver, house the LED, and dissipate heat generated by the LED. In fact, ELCO's expert, you may recall, had an image where they took the image of the unified casting, the patent, and the image of that adapter, oriented them the same, colored them the same, and said it was a that they were equivalent. And the board looked at that and said, no, no, they're not. And so they absolutely made the argument that it taught recessing and recessing a light inside of junction box. And that just wasn't true. When you look at Gifford, the light fixture actually is a serviceman light that hangs well below the adapter plate. As the board properly and with substantial evidence found, you wouldn't conclude that that houses a light fixture. So in looking at the obviousness argument, then overall, the issues for ground two and three, well, ground three, which is the only one they appeal for every claim but claim 22, the board has substantial evidence for their conclusion. They concluded that Elko had not shown one would use Gifford and would be motivated to use Gifford to mount a lighting device inside of a junction box. In fact, the board also pointed to testimony from DMS expert, Mr. Benya, that a person skilled in the art wouldn't be motivated to take this Entra device, this low voltage device that can be mounted, readily mounted directly to the ceiling with screws, and that didn't need a junction box. They wouldn't be motivated to go through the time, labor, and expense of installing a junction box and then attaching it to a junction box it doesn't need. Our expert explained, in fact, that this is important because you may be installing thousands of lights in a building or such, so you can just screw it directly in the ceiling and do a 5-minute install, or you can install a junction box and convert 5 minutes to 20, and when you're doing that for 1,000 lights, that makes a big difference. Our expert cited, it's undisputed, unchallenged, that the reason you use low voltage lights is because you don't have to deal with the safety standards.
I'm going to interrupt you and just let you know that you are now out of time. Okay. Do you have one sentence that you would like to provide to summarize it? Because we do have your briefs.
Okay, well, then I guess, you know, we rest certainly on our briefing on these issues. I thank Your Honor for taking the time.
Thank you. The case is submitted. We thank both counsel for their argument.